Welcome to Red Card, a show where we discuss all the simple, scandalous, and complicated reasons why relationships end. I'm your host, Dolly, and today we're going to get into some things. So on this episode, we're going to discuss a very peculiar case on a woman who divorced her sick husband. Now I know some of you might be thinking, what? Who would do that? But I implore you to save your thoughts till the end. And I really think that this episode will shed some light on a very important ingredient of being in any relationship. Now, I followed this app or this forum called Quora, which they normally send me like emails every now and again of, you know, crazy situations or random situations, just different questions that people ask and then people answer. So someone had asked this question: what is the most misunderstood situation you've ever been involved in? And this is when this lady answered it. And this is what she said. She said, "I divorced my husband in 2014, a year after he had a stroke. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? It sure did to people who didn't know the whole story. But there was a whole lot more to our 22-year story. I loved my husband and he was my best friend, but he also had a serious drinking problem. It was probably my fault for trying to give him privacy, which I now realize enabled him. But not many people knew about how bad it had gotten and how it was taking a toll on my well-being. They also didn't know that a few months before the stroke, he had had a bad accident at home because of his drinking. After that, I gave him an ultimatum. Join a recovery group for your drinking, or I can't stay with you and watch this keep happening. He said he didn't like groups, and I tried to get my life together to leave. Then he had the stroke. The day that it happened was the worst day of my life. I watched the person I loved the most almost die. No matter how angry you are at someone you love, all that anger vanishes when you see their life fade in your arms. There was no question in my mind that I would be with him through stroke recovery. But stroke recovery doesn't always happen the way we want it to. The stroke had left him paralyzed on his right side, unable to read and write, and unable to understand numbers. I made sure I saw him every day so he knew he wasn't alone in this. He was in the hospital for 2 months after the stroke. When I drove 2 hours every day to the hospital after work and 2 hours back home to sleep. Then he went to a physical rehabilitation center for a month. He was sent home with me, despite him being unable to sit up in bed without assistance. I tried to take care of him at home for 2 months, injuring myself a few times in the process and interfering with the new job I'd started that ensured we had health insurance to cover his needs. After a hospital stay for a stomach virus, he was discharged to a nursing center for more physical rehab. My life now consisted of taking care of him and trying to work. The only days I didn't visit were when someone else would go in my place, which was usually once or twice every couple of weeks. If he was in the hospital for something serious or if I knew I had to work late that night, I would go in before work. I was beyond exhausted. I kept getting sick with unusual for me infections, things that indicated how exhausted my body was. My days since the stroke had been all nearly the same. Get up, go to work, leave work, run a few errands, go to whatever facility. It changed throughout the year from hospital to acute care center to rehab to nursing facility, and I would visit him. Go home, attempt to wind down and go to bed. Lather, rinse, repeat, day after day after day. It was a grueling life, and at each phase I struggled to find my new normal. I kept expecting him to get better like the doctor said he would, and be able to live at home without constant supervision and assistance. I was exhausted. He had been in and out of the hospital frequently. Seizures, stomach viruses, pneumonia. We saw specialist after specialist for various health problems that had been uncovered in the past year. He hadn't been to a doctor for about 5 years prior to the stroke, despite having diabetes and high blood pressure, so a lot of chronic problems had been neglected. About 10 months after the stroke, he was hospitalized for congestive heart failure. After they did an echocardiogram, the doctor came to discuss it and said it was unusual to see someone his age with that type of heart failure. Then he asked if he had had untreated high blood pressure for some time. Bingo. All those years when he had refused medication for his blood pressure and diabetes had finally come calling. When I learned that, I started to feel like I was going down in a sinking ship. All of the health decisions he had made for the past 15 years weren't just affecting his life. Since I was his caretaker, they were affecting mine too. All the stress made me constantly exhausted. I was sick frequently, but couldn't take much time off from caregiving to take care of myself. I had injured my back trying to lift him, and I was in a depressive spiral. Life was bleak. I had trouble just getting up in the morning, knowing what faced me each day. On one of my visits, the Friday before Memorial Day, to the facility where he stayed, I stopped in to see the physical therapist to talk about his progress and how soon he'll be able to come home. She took me aside and told me gently that she didn't see him being able to progress to living independently. My heart sank. She suggested that I spend some time thinking about what I needed to do to take care of myself. She implied that I might need to get a divorce, or at the very least, take a very big step back to reclaim my life. Everyone had been trying to work toward him being able to come home, including me. Yet when I thought about the life we'd had before, the one where I was constantly worried he'd been drinking, the one where I hated who he was when he was drunk, I realized much of that life was trying to work around his drinking problem. I was working toward bringing him home to a home life I hated. Around that time, I went to my doctor for one of the many minor infections I'd had that year, and she told me sternly that I needed to take some time off work, 1 or 2 weeks if I could, to take care of myself. The stress I was enduring on a daily basis was threatening my own health. In my mind, there were only two options with regard to taking care of him. One was as his wife, who visited every day and was involved in every aspect of his care. A wife wouldn't be any less involved than that. Or two, the role everyone else around him seemed to have taken. Check in when they can, but assume everything was taken care of. But what does marriage look like when you're both 41 and one of you is in a nursing home, requiring help to even turn over in bed? I'd known deep down for years that he probably wouldn't make it to 50, but with the extreme stress I was living, would I make it that long? As his wife, there was no option of stepping back and assuming someone else was taking care of him. He had been my best friend for more than 22 years, and I couldn't just wash my hands off that. Even with all the problems before the stroke, the therapist and my doctor had given me a lot to think about. I don't remember what particular thing made me come to my decision. I spent some time thinking about our lives before the stroke and how I had been getting things together to leave after he refused to get help for his drinking. I was growing resentful and angry, being the one to take care of the things that he had refused to deal with. The effects of his untreated diabetes and high blood pressure. At one point, I realized I had lost myself in all of this. You know when you're on an airplane during the safety demonstration, how they tell you in the event of cabin depressurization, oxygen masks will drop. They show you how to put the mask on, telling you, put the mask on yourself first before helping others. Why? If you don't put it on yourself first, you may not be able to help others. Put the oxygen mask on first. What good am I to anyone if I don't take care of myself? I decided that since he had reached a stable point and had most likely progressed as far as he could in physical and occupational therapy, I would resume planning to strike out on my own. It was the most heartbreaking decision I have ever had to make in my life. I cried the whole weekend. I cried telling his sister what I needed to do. I cried telling him. His sister said she knew this day would eventually come, and she was surprised it took this long. She was one of the few people who had known about the drinking problem and had seen firsthand the problems it had caused. He of course promised he wouldn't drink again, a promise that was short-lived since he soon was asking other people to bring him alcoholic beverages when they visited. I made it clear to both of them that while we were getting a divorce on paper, I was not abandoning him. I would still visit, just not every day. I would still accompany him to appointments, just not everyone. I would still bring him his favorite things. After all, we've been best friends for 22 years. I loved him. He was hurt though, and I was the one hurting him. I felt horrible for that. Whenever I questioned what I was doing, I had to remind myself of how many times he'd hurt me over the years with deception and empty promises. How working around his drinking affected my health. If I stayed, I knew there would be more of that to come. So to the outsider, it looked like I was leaving because I didn't want to take care of him after the stroke. Little did many of them know that after we got divorced and after we had both taken some time, I was still his most frequent visitor. I sat by his hospital bed the days when he was in respiratory failure or sepsis or had another cardiac arrest or just wanted someone to come by and visit. I was his health historian when he had any major procedures or when he was admitted to the hospital. He would introduce me to hospital staff as the ex-wife he couldn't get rid of. I made sure hospital staff knew that he needed help ordering food because he couldn't read some of the menu and couldn't dial the phone. And if they asked a question he didn't know the answer to, he'd just point to me because he knew I could answer for him. It meant so much to me to be able to step in and help him when he needed it. Sometimes I think about where I would be now if I hadn't gotten the divorce, if I had kept up what I was doing. I'll probably be bitter, exhausted, and constantly sick. My doctors and the physical therapist tried to gently warn me about where I was headed. Eventually, I would have ended up being physically unable to help him, and he would have felt alone and guilty of the toll it took on me. Doing what I did allowed me to come in and help him with renewed energy and pave the way for a new type of relationship between us, one that I cherish. For someone accused of abandoning him, I sure ended up being around a lot. He's been gone a little more than a year now, and I still miss him terribly. I'm so lucky to have so many years of memories with him. So what do you think about this story? At first, when I had first seen the title, or when I had first seen how she, I think the first line where she said she divorced her husband after a stroke, I was like, why would anyone leave their partner when their partner is going through something like this? But after reading the whole story, I completely understood where she was coming from. It is a difficult place to be in when you have a partner who has demons that doesn't just seem to go away. And this is one of the reasons why it's important that before you get into a relationship or a marriage, you have to know everything they need to know about your partner. You have to know all the deep, dark secrets regarding them so that you know if this is something that you need to deal with or if this is something that you need to, you know, just bounce, you know? And I think it's very important. The major ingredient I was talking about that is important to have in any relationship is to be able to be take care of yourself, to be well taken care of yourself. It's not about entering a relationship being broken. You're not trying to meet someone that completes you. You're supposed to be complete within yourself, and then you meet another complete person, and then both of you are just, you know, building a life together. So it's very important to take care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of anybody else. This is why if you're single and you're trying to be in a relationship, take care of yourself first. Build who you are first, so that when you meet someone and you know that there are things that you can't handle, you don't stay in that relationship for longer than you need to. So what do you guys think? Are you more understanding of why she had to do it, or do you still think she was wrong for doing it? Share your thoughts with us on our social media platforms. We'll be back shortly with our Blow the Whistle segment.
This show was brought to you by Jammy.fm.
So as you know, the Blow the Whistle segment is where we read real stories from people shared online or sent to us, and we'll decide if the person needs to blow a whistle on their relationship. So this is one that I had seen on the Shade Room. She said, what should I do? When my boyfriend and I first started dating, I asked him what his relationship was with his ex. He says that they talked every now and then. I didn't see a problem because my ex and I talk every now and then, about every 6 to 8 months. So one night I woke up because his phone was going off, and I noticed that his ex sent him something on Snapchat at 1 a.m. So I asked him why. Like, why does she need to snap you at 1 a.m.? He said that they're friends and she was probably just out. Then I asked how often do they talk since she feels comfortable enough to snap you at 1 in the morning. He told me that they FaceTime 2 to 3 times a week. I went off. Now she's asking, what should she do? I think that when you're in a relationship with someone and they still communicate with their ex, personally, I don't see a huge problem with it if it's not a daily thing or an everyday thing, if it's not something that, you know, it's regular. I don't see any point of someone, in fact, a friend of mine will tell you that she doesn't want her, the person she's with, communicating with any exes whatsoever, because she wouldn't do the same. So she doesn't want her partner to do the same. She feels like once the relationship is done, it's done. Let's turn our backs and move on. Let's carry on. So in this kind of situation, I think that I don't necessarily think that she should blow the whistle yet. But I think that if he is not willing to, at the very least, listen to her concerns and try and cut off that relationship, seeing as he bothers her, then that is a problem. And in that situation, she should go and just leave it alone. Because very soon now, the next thing you hear is he slept with his ex. And we have been seeing all the signs already from the beginning. So I think that for now, she should talk to her partner. And if she feels like he is not listening to her, or he is not taking steps to make her feel better, or taking steps to alleviate her concerns, then she needs to leave that relationship. And that's that on that. So what do you guys think? Share your thoughts with us. Let us know what you think on the situation. What do you think she should do? So this is where we're going to end today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. On the very next one, we're going to be talking about valid reasons to leave a relationship. So basically, valid reasons to, you know, bounce to the red card. Be sure to share your comments on our latest episode and on our social media platforms. And I'm looking forward to talking with you on the next episode. Bye.
Red Card was produced and edited by Stanley Agbadigo. Scripted by Dolapo Akitoye. This show was brought to you by Jammin.fm, the home of African podcasts.